Support comes from Sunday Morning Cafe, presenting Resilience and Creativity, a concert and interview with Royce Martin, creator of Swag Time, and resilience researcher Dr. Tom Wagner on August 2nd, SundayMorningCafe.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, July 15th. I'm Abby Larico. Immigrants without legal status can find themselves facing deportation to a country where they have no ties. It happens when a judge determines it's not safe to send a person to their home country, but all legal options to remain in the U.S. have been exhausted. There are people awaiting their fates in Missouri, Illinois, and across the Midwest.
A phone call can come at any given time telling me that my wife is out of this country. That's the fear that I have every single day until I get her home.
Plus, musician John Batiste is reimagining key works by Mozart and Beethoven through a lens of jazz, blues, and other American music.
I think about what they would have done with the color palette of Black American classical music. What would they have done with those sounds and those conceptions?
Batiste describes his musical mission ahead of opening the Matty Festival tomorrow. Those stories coming up after this news on The Gateway. A Midtown St. Louis warehouse where developers hope to build a data center was set to be available at a delinquent property sale yesterday. But as St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri reports, the property was pulled at the last minute.
The development group Green Street owed more than $2 million in back taxes on the building next to the Armory, so the city collector of revenue sent notice the property would be included in the sale. That was until Green Street made a last-minute payment of about $588,000 towards the amount it owes, sparing the property. The collector's office says the company plans to pay the rest of its taxes by the end of October. If it doesn't, the property will be back on the market again. Developers hope to build a 120-megawatt data center in the Goodwill Building as part of a $3 billion innovation district in Midtown. Anti-data center groups argue the collector's office broke state law by pulling the sale. The office rejects that notion. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
Metro East prosecutors have filed first-degree murder charges against two teenagers in the shooting deaths of five people in East St. Louis this weekend. The Belleville News-Democrat reports the St. Clair County State's Attorney's Office filed charges against 16-year-old Jamier Davis, who will be tried as an adult. The prosecutors also filed charges against another suspect in juvenile court and do intend to ask the court to prosecute that second suspect as an adult. Illinois State Police officials previously said the agency arrested a 15-year-old suspect who's related to the targeted family. Five people were killed in the weekend spree and two others were injured. St. Clair County prosecutors already filed a petition to keep the 16-year-old suspect in jail while he awaits trial. The owners of the Gelateria on South Grand Boulevard are struggling to make a comeback. It's more than a year since a fire destroyed the cafe and coffee shop. STLPR Sarah Fentum has details.
The restaurant has been closed since the March 2025 fire. Owners Andy and Amanda Fair have been applying for a federal small business loan and historic designations that will help them fix the property. Andy Fair says the project needs $2.4 million, but has hit a snag. Because the business has not been continuously open, the U.S. Small Business Administration is treating their application as a new business loan. That means the owners need $120,000 extra dollars for a down payment.
Every step of the way, we're like, this is it. This is all we have to do. We're going to get started. And then they, like, move the goal line.
Fair says the support from customers in the neighborhood has kept the owners' morale up while they deal with the red tape. I'm Sarah Fentum, St. Louis Public Radio.
U.S. Representative Wesley Bell says he's advocating for the federal SBA to make an exception to the new business rule. We told you earlier this week about how Governor Mike Kehoe signed a total of 44 bills into Missouri law Monday, and now we're telling you more about some of them. One raises the speed limit on rural highways and interstates to 75 miles per hour. Governor Kehoe also signed a law allowing vendors to round a sale to the closest nickel for cash transactions. Supporters of that law say it's necessary because the U.S. Mint officially stopped producing pennies in November. The law would not apply to transactions made without cash, like with a debit card. Additionally, Kehoe signed legislation creating a new purple alert system within the Department of Public Safety. The system will aid in identifying and locating missing people with developmental disabilities whose disappearance poses a threat to themselves. The department will have until July 1st of 2027 to develop a training program and alert system. One of the bills contains a multitude of election policies. STLPR's Sarah Kellogg has more.
Missouri candidates will no longer be able to collect automatic campaign donations without the explicit permission of the donor. Under the legislation, affirmation cannot include failing to uncheck a pre-checked box authorizing the donation. Additionally, the bill restores voting rights to many people who are either on probation or parole. Current law prohibits people from voting until they are finally discharged for a felony. The new bill changes that statute and instead only bars people from voting while on parole or probation after conviction for specific crimes, including murder and child endangerment. I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
And school districts that largely exist within St. Charles County will have to hold their school board elections in November. That's after Governor Kehoe signed into law legislation that moves those elections. The legislation also requires all terms on the school board be 4 years. At the time of filing, a candidate would be able to designate their party affiliation and allow for that affiliation to appear beside their name on the ballot. You can find more coverage of these new laws at stlpr.org. Only one of the three Democrats seeking the party's nomination for St. Louis County Executive has experience running a countywide office. As STLPR's Rachel Lippman reports, County Assessor Jake Zimmerman says that makes him the best person to solve the county's budget woes.
For the last several budget years, county officials have used one-time funds to help close the gaps. Zimmerman says that needs to stop. He says he would take the same steps to fix the county's problems as he did when he became assessor in 2012. Back then, he says, the office's budget was headed toward the red and there was no source of funding to bail him out.
I talked to the subject matter experts and I asked them what they needed to have, what they wanted to fight for, and then we talked it out until we got to the right answer. And I don't think there's enough talking it out happening right now.
Zimmerman was a guest on the Politically Speaking podcast. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Rachel speaking to all three Democratic candidates for St. Louis County Executive this week. You can hear more of those conversations on Politically Speaking or at stlpr.org. This year's tornado season has been surpassing records for many states in the Midwest. Illinois leads the nation for most tornadoes with 178 so far. That's according to the National Weather Service. Missouri has had 81 tornadoes this year, nearly 30 more than the state's average, according to state climatologist Zach Leeser. He says this year follows a trend of tornadoes shifting east of Tornado Alley.
There's also been kind of a secondary area. More in the eastern and southeast United States, you might hear it referred to as Dixie Alley, but kind of the secondary tornado alley. And we're finding a lot more tornado activity occurring there.
Experts say climate change causing warmer temperatures could be contributing to this increase in activity in these regions. Midwestern states like Indiana and Iowa have also had above average tornado activity this year. The St. Louis Science Center is revealing some upgrades to its planetarium that will allow guests to land on the surface of the moon or look up close at Saturn's rings. As STLPR's Anison Krebs Carr reports, these improvements will make the planetarium one of the largest and most advanced in the U.S.
The upgrades include a new Chiron star projector and a Digistar projection system. Will Snyder is the manager of the planetarium. He said the planetarium's old projection system did a good job at looking at the sky from Earth, but that's all it could do.
You couldn't go anywhere else, and if it wasn't a star or a constellation, you really couldn't show it to people in a convincing or engaging way. So questions like, you know, can you show me a black hole? I'm glad the answer is yes, we can.
Snyder says the new projection system allows visitors to go anywhere in the universe. The system costs $2.5 million. The planetarium will reopen to the public on Saturday after being closed for 5 months. I'm Anison Krebs Carr, St. Louis Public Radio.
Thank you. third country deportation refers to the practice of sending people without legal status to countries they've never lived in, where they often have no ties. The number of people facing this fate has skyrocketed under President Donald Trump. The Midwest Newsroom's Steph Conquest-Ware reports.
Mike B., is that you? What's up, man?
Sakai Shaheeb is a PGA golf professional and teaches the game for a living in Independence, Missouri. On the weekends, he hits the golf course with his wife, Elisa Ramdell Shaheeb, and their two kids. Elisa normally drives the cart and stocks the cooler. She snaps pictures for Instagram and Facebook. Now, Sakai mostly golfs alone or with clients. That's because Elisa has been in ICE detention since February. The native of Trinidad and Tobago spoke to the Midwest Newsroom via video call from the Chase County Detention Center in Kansas.
So, it's a big adjustment, it's different, and it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking to be away from your kids.
Sakai's been trying to bring Elisa home for 5 months. At the 6-month mark, she can file a writ of habeas corpus, a legal move that often results in ICE detainees being released while they appeal their deportation orders.
And to have to put that face on of normalcy and then knowing that, man, in the inside, my world is really crumbling.
Elisa has a criminal record from a drug case that landed her in a Florida jail at age 30. More than a decade ago, she served almost 6 years. Since January 2025, nearly 20,000 immigrants have been sent to countries other than their own, according to Third Country Deportation Watch, which tracks removals. Through court records, the Midwest Newsroom identified at least 30 people in ICE custody in Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, Nebraska, and Illinois that the Department of Homeland Security has tried or successfully removed to third countries. The Immigration and Nationality Act allows DHS to send deportees to alternative countries if sending them home is impractical, inadvisable, or impossible. Bram Elias is a law professor and director of the Immigration Advocacy Clinic at the University of Iowa.
Even though it will only be applied to a small number of people, it could conceivably be applied to literally every asylum seeker in the United States. Millions and millions of people.
Elisa came to the U.S. from Trinidad more than 27 years ago. A withholding of removal order from a judge means she cannot be sent back to her birth country, where she fears persecution from her former husband. He has drug convictions, and Elisa believes he lives on the island now. Here's her lawyer, Maya King.
So they can always reopen that withholding of removal and try to send you back to your home country, or they might pursue a third country removal.
34 countries have agreements with the U.S. to receive deportees. Jose Ugar Cruz is worried he'll meet the same fate. Now living in Iowa City, the Bolivian came to the U.S. seeking asylum in July 2024 after he says he was tortured in his home country for refusing to help traffic drugs. A judge denied his asylum case, but ruled he could not be deported to Bolivia. While detained, Homeland Security authorities tried to send Ugar Cruz to Argentina, Chile, Paraguay, Mexico, and Canada, according to court records. But he was released last December after filing a writ of habeas corpus. I thought I was free from the government and the ICE raids, he said at a June neighborhood meeting with immigration attorneys in an Iowa City suburb. In April, ICE detained Ugar Cruz again at a routine immigration check-in. Records show DHS tried to deport him to the Democratic Republic of Congo, a country at war and facing an Ebola outbreak. For me, it was terrible news since I don't have any relatives there. I don't speak their language. I don't even know their government or what the Democratic Republic of Congo is going to be like. Ugar Cruz's lawyers fought his removal, and in May, authorities granted Ugar Cruz temporary release, leaving him safe from deportation for now. Back in Missouri, Sakai dreams of teaching Elisa how to play golf if or when she's released from ICE detention. I'm Steph Conquest-Ware, the Midwest Newsroom.
The Midwest Newsroom is a collaboration including NPR and member stations in Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, and Missouri, and is a member of the Trust Project. Genre-hopping musician Jon Batiste will open the 4-day Maddie Festival tomorrow night at the Fabulous Fox Theater. That's the festival formerly known as Music at the Intersection. Batiste will release three albums next month, including Black Mozart, a follow-up to his 2024 album Beethoven Blues. The 8-time Grammy Award winner tells St. Louis Public Radio why he's putting his own spin on the work of classical composers.
I really enjoyed making Beethoven Blues because he has so much pathos, so much of his personal pain in the music, that there's so many emotions you can draw from to pull out the blues that you could immediately feel it. In the first few notes of Fur Elise, I was like, oh, that's pain, that's lost love. That struck me immediately. You know, I don't even believe in genre terminology to begin with, but I think that the idea of classical music now can extend. What about Black American classical music, like jazz and blues and R&B and funk? Why is this music not classical? I think about Black Mozart and I think about Beethoven, and I think about what they would have done with the color palette of Black American classical music. What would they have done with those sounds and those conceptions? With Mozart, that is a different spirit. He's coming from a different place.
Blum, 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 ba-da-dum, blum, no.
I felt that that innocence and that spirit of pure melody and spirit of pure symmetrical melodic construction that just sounds perfect, it feels inevitable, it feels like that's the only thing that it could ever be. I didn't want to change that at all. But what I did was I added a level of harmonic and melodic counterpoint to it that feels like, oh man, this feels very Black. I can play classical music as written and I could do all of that, but I wanted to synthesize it and not lose the essence of Mozart, but then on the other side make a statement that was fully me, almost like we were in conversation and we were composing something together rather than me just interpreting his music. I wanted to create something new that opens the door and expands the canon and also speaks to people who probably never would listen to Mozart and never would listen to Beethoven, but would then listen to this, and that would be their gateway. Anything that moves you is because it's capturing that feeling of what it means to be a human on the planet in a way that you can relate to. It makes you feel like you're not alone.
That was John Batiste, who's opening the Maddie Festival tomorrow. St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin produced that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Our theme music's by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur, but right now, more Batiste. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.